We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get insight into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. Now, let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
All right, so there's a massive three-game weekend series at Mon County Ballpark coming up. Hi, everybody. Welcome inside our studios. Dan Zang, really glad to have you along. It is TCU weekend as WVU prepares to do battle against the Horned Frogs. And it's really a make-or-break series for West Virginia, who is about to, by the way, post up for 11 straight home games in Morgantown. It's a team that, as we all know and always has, starts the season on the road for about a month. But this Big 12 leg in April has really seen West Virginia play more away from home than they have at home. And they've been able to tread water. They've been able to hang in there. And with all the adversity and the changes that they've had to endure in and around the program, be it injury or losing their head coach for a 12-game stretch, West Virginia has found a way to just stay upright. The knockout blow has not been delivered, and I'm not sure it's going to be delivered because of the guy that they have going for them each and every Friday. And he's going to be our guest here on the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. That's left-hander Jackson Wolf, who went up against a first-round draft pick, consensus draft pick, in left-hander Jordan Wicks at Kansas State last weekend. And he struck out a career-best 10 batters. He went a career-long 8-plus. West Virginia winds up going on to win that game in extras, and WVU has won more than they've lost with Jackson Wolf on the mound. And he is really throwing the ball as well as he ever has. And in a year that has been quite inconsistent, Wolf has been the model of consistency. And we're going to get into it here coming up on the Mountaineer Insider. We're going to talk about the TCU series, but we're going to talk about how Jackson Wolf became Jackson Wolf. It wasn't necessarily an easy road to hoe. The pod will start out with me talking about basically how he's evolved, what he's learned, adjustments that he's had to make, and we talk about the mindset, the mentality that he has been able to adapt and he has adopted and implemented into his game. The great thing about being around a team as a broadcaster is talking to them and introducing yourself to them when they come in as a green very raw, inexperienced, and at some times, in some points, a very nervous freshman. I remember this with Alek Manoah. The way that they grow and mature when you put them in a college athletics infrastructure, and especially a good program with great resources, and then you have a conversation with them in year three, and in particular year four, that's one of the most enjoyable moments of my job. And I hope you enjoy a conversation that goes almost a half an hour long, because you get insightful answers from really insightful people and mature people, which Jackson Wolf is, confident, not cocky, and introspective at the same time. It's I think, a very, very awesome experience. I hope that you enjoy. If you follow the program closely, you'll be able to see just the massive strides, even from a year or two ago, that Jackson Wolf has made from 2019 to where he is now. From his sophomore year to senior year, it's just, it's a completely different person, completely different pitcher. Somebody that takes the ball every week, every Friday night, and goes out and deals. And he's got a massive game coming up for him personally, but also for this West Virginia University baseball program, because the season, not to be overly dramatic, does in some respects hang in the balance. So stay with us. Coming up next, it's a long-form conversation with West Virginia's big, tall, 6'7" ace left-hander from Gahanna, Ohio. West Virginia athletics has been treated oh so great from Gahanna, Ohio, particularly on the football side. But here on the baseball diamond, West Virginia, a big benefactor. Stand by. We'll hear from Jackson coming up in just a moment.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice-cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today, tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
So, Jackson, here you are. You're having the year that I think that you've wanted to have for a long time, the year that you were really having last year in some respects before COVID. Anytime that you have something pulled out from under you, you always want to know if you can repeat it and do it over again. And I think you've answered that question here. Talk about the difficulty of last year and how you've used that for fuel to power you this year.
Yeah, I mean, I got off to a great start last year and was feeling really good. You know, obviously it was a dead stop once COVID hit, and you know, it kind of rocked everybody's world. Nobody really knew what to do, and I had been throwing for a few months beforehand, so I figured that would be a good time more than ever, because I had no clue when at that point we would be back to shut the arm down for a little bit and take a little bit of a break. And then by the end of the summer, when we kind of had a little bit better of a feel for what, you know, what all the COVID guidelines are going to be and when we're going to, you know, be back and stuff like that. And, you know, the draft had passed by then. So I knew I was going to, you know, come back to school. And so, at that point, I wanted to come back and just kind of repeat what I was doing at the beginning. And I think, in my first couple outings, I was out there, you know, super excited, ready to go. And, you know, had a couple early on jitters, but once I kind of settled in and have been throwing in the Big 12 series, it's I've been doing pretty good and pretty happy with some of my performances.
So you said you had jitters. Why did you have jitters, and what were those derived from?
Not being out there for a year, you know, it was it had been close to a year since I had seen an opposing teammate in a batter's box. So, you know, once I got out there and, you know, a bunch of fans in the stands and, you know, it had been a year since then and since I had had that before. And so it was, you know, I was kind of excited. It wasn't really locked in and focused on what I needed to do at that point. I was just kind of like, you know, going through the motions, expecting me to have the same season that I did last year. And so once I kind of realized that I need to, you know, focus in and really, really bear down and hone in on my craft, that's when things turned around. And not to say that the first few starts were bad in any means, but the starts that I've been having more recently have been very good, and as compared to the earlier on starts.
And that's because of a routine, I would think, to be able to to take the ball every other week, to get your flush runs in, all the things that a starting pitcher does. And I'm not sure a lot of folks truly understand what baseball is, especially starting pitching, is from a creature of habit standpoint. So to hear you mention that it was a weird thing for you to take the mound, it was a year, but still, mm-hmm. a year is an eternity in the game of baseball for a starting pitcher. And it's interesting to hear you describe it like that, because I think we all would assume that it's just like riding a bike. You've been pitching since you were 5, 6 years old. That's not the case. So that's an interesting thing and perspective for you to share with us.
Yeah, and I feel so much more comfortable now on the mound. I would definitely say I'm in mid-season form. I threw 128 pitches, I believe, on Friday, and I had no soreness, to be completely honest with you, in my arm. It was I had obviously the soreness in the body, just naturally moving for 3+ hours and pausing for 10 minutes at a time. That'll definitely make your body a little achy or sore, but that's all in the lat or in the chest, just from my movement. But I really have no soreness in my arm after that start, and that's kind of been the trend. And that's a dead giveaway that the routines that I've been going through, and my body feels really comfortable with it's very, very at ease with the routine that I'm in right now. So I'm pretty pleased with that as well.
Safe to say that the confidence is in about as good a spot as it's ever been, perhaps, in your life?
Yeah, for sure. Because, I mean, going into last year's draft, I felt like I was ready to play pro baseball. And so once, I knew I was coming back here, and, I had to keep a pro ball mentality, in order to be successful and pitch to the keep progressing in the way that I want to go. And so basically every time I go out on the mound now, I know that I'm better than anybody that steps in the opposing batter's box, and that really makes pitching easier when you have a lot of confidence. So the mental part of pitching is so important, and it plays a huge role in whether you have success or not. And I would say my mental state right now when I'm on the mound is at a hasn't been at a better spot. I just feel very comfortable and pretty confident. Yeah.
Explain to me what that is, because a lot of folks talk about it. A lot of folks are striving for it. Some unfortunately never find it. Tell me what it's like to be in the spot that you're at now, and take that a little deeper, if you would.
Yeah. So the saying that I like to use to really sum it up well is in the past, and sometimes when I see pitchers struggle, it's a lot of times mentally, and that's because they're trying not to fail. When you're out there trying not to fail instead of expecting to succeed, you can't. You're not going to be as successful as you can possibly be, because when you come from a place of confidence, and you expect success in a game of baseball in itself is a game of failure. So you're going to come across that naturally as a baseball player. And when you kind of accept that and come to terms with you're going to come across adversity or failure at some point, it makes it a little bit easier to be confident, because that's not so much of a big factor in your head. So pitching, knowing that you're going to succeed, and then when failure comes, you trust your training, you trust yourself and why you're there in the first place, you're going to get through it. And so there's always another day as well, you get another chance, but I would say, the name of the game in pitching is mentality, having a good mentality and your confidence.
What allowed you to get to this spot? How did you get to this spot? Is it just simply an experience thing, trial and error, going out and failing and not maybe accomplishing what you had initially set out to do, whether that's, say, oh, I want to go seven innings tonight, I only go five, or that could be I go 2 2/3 and give up eight runs. There's different forms, I guess, of falling short of expectations, and different people put different types of pressure on themselves. So I'm curious as to how you get there from here.
Yeah, I mean, I've grown exponentially since my freshman year. A lot of that is just part of growing up naturally as a human being. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is being an experienced college baseball player, knowing how things work and what type of talent you're going to see on a daily basis. And like you said, trial and error. So, I mean, my freshman year coming out of the bullpen, I had a fairly solid year. You know, I made some solid appearances. Knew I was in a pretty solid spot to come back the next year and start behind Alec Manoah. And once I made that year come about and I was in the starting role, you know, that was my first year in the starting role. So I was kind of still figuring out how to be a college starter. And once I was able to see guys like Alec pitch and Cade Stroud pitch and, you know, personal trial and error on Saturdays that year, you know, it gives you that confidence, and it gives you that, you know, bit of experience that you need rolling into the next summer ball season, which was when I went up to Cape Cod League. And, you know, when I went up there, my growth pretty much continued, and, you know, I was did pretty good up there, and I knew that I was going to be kind of the guy the next year once I came back, because Alec had been drafted, Cade had been drafted, and we kind of lost a good bit. So I knew I was in a good spot with all my experience to be the guy. And once you come to terms with your role, you accept your role, and you know how things work, it becomes easier naturally. So I would just say my growth has been pretty exponential just over throughout my career. Yeah.
How do you maintain the confidence without putting pressure on yourself? Because let's be real here, there's a lot of pressure here for you to get to the next level. You want to achieve your dream, and that's to get to the pros, get drafted, and to become a major leaguer. That, perhaps in the history of the game, is harder now because of sheer numbers game, because they've reduced the drafts so significantly, and they've reduced minor league systems so significantly. It's harder now to do than ever before. So you have to be the elite of the elite to find your way in the club, for lack of a better term. And I'm assuming that that would come with an unbelievable amount of pressure for somebody in your position, or any college player for that matter.
Right. I kind of had a little bit of that pressure last year because I knew I was in a similar spot. You know, it was my draft year. I know I have to, you know, show out and impress scouts and do better than guys that are ranked higher than me. And that was a thing that I didn't really get to do last year, was get my matchups against guys who were going to go higher. So, it's kind of funny, to think about, because the season ended on a Thursday last year. That was we're on the road to the airport when we got turned around and told our season was done because of COVID. And that next day I was supposed to start against a potential first rounder. Well, he did end up going first round to the Dodgers, Clayton Beter. I was supposed to match up with him that next day, and you know, one more day of that season could have been the difference. And that was kind of the thing that I was missing last year, was the matchups against other elite prospects. And so that definitely holds a lot of pressure. And I think once I had, you know, my Friday night experience last year, and, you know, having my confidence coming in this year, I've had a couple opportunities to pitch against other guys that are going to be my draft picks. You know, I had a pretty good showing against a Coastal Carolina batter that's going to be a good, pretty good draft pick, Parker Chavers. Mm-hmm. And then I got to match up against Jordan Wicks last week, who's another potential first rounder. And I think I
you did all right.
I showed about as good, if not better, than he did. So I'm I think I'm putting myself in a pretty good spot. But like you said, it definitely does come with a lot of pressure. But once you get those, like I said, that experience under your belt, it becomes easier and easier. And so that's what's keeping me confident going into this weekend. I have another matchup with a guy who's rated ahead of me in the prospect rankings. And Russell Smith, I believe, is who I'm going against TCU this weekend. And he's another premier left-hander that is a potential draft pick. So, that experience keeps me confident in games like these. And I feel pretty comfortable going into Friday.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that matchup against Wicks and of course, the one that you have coming up here. You've mentioned that, this guy's ahead of me, that guy's ahead of me, this guy's ahead of me. I mean, do you feel like you can play a disrespect card that you can say, hey, what else do I got to do here to show that maybe I'm worthy of a little ink to be higher on the mock draft boards or whatever it may be? I don't know what type of feedback that you're getting, from scouts, because at the end of the day, that's what matters, not so much the media hype. But right. You've kind of always been in a position where you've had to prove yourself, and even when you do, you still have to do it again and again and again and again after that.
100%. And that is, hasn't even started in college. That started back in high school. I was, West Virginia was my only offer. I wasn't a high level recruit, a highly sought after guy. So once West Virginia gave me the chance, I kind of had to prove myself once I got here that I belonged in the spot. And, I think I did that pretty well, and then I had to earn my role in the Cape Cod League. And once I pretty much became our ace on our team in the Cape Cod League, and a pretty good showing last year, and then didn't get drafted when I thought that was going to be my year. And so I definitely feel like I have had to try to prove people wrong, but I think that coincides with my success, because when I keep that the mentality that I'm going to go out and prove these people wrong, I'm going to go out and show these people why I should be in a certain position over another guy, I think that's another piece of motivation that I use when I'm out on the mound. And that definitely comes up in games like the ones against Wicks last week. I knew that he's going to be a potential first round pick, and that if I can outshine him in a way that I should be a potential first round pick. I should be, in that position.
You're a pretty easygoing, level-headed, thoughtful guy. As we have this conversation, as I listen to your answers, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so I'll ask you to answer this for yourself. Are you pissed off, or are you maybe pitching like you're pissed off?
In a sense, I would say I have a good amount of poise and level-headedness when I'm on the mound, because in my experience, when you get too amped up, that's when you kind of lose focus and you're not as honed in on your craft. But I would definitely say I'm pitching with a chip on my shoulder, because I have something to prove. I have people that still doubt that I can be a starter. I have people that doubt longevity, and I've never been injured, knock on wood, never had a major injury. Went 128 pitches this past weekend, and arm felt amazing the next day, and felt like I could have pitched another 50 on Friday. To be completely honest with you, I still felt like I was on the incline of that outing. I wouldn't say I'm pitching pissed off, but I'm pitching with a purpose, and I'm pitching with something to prove.
Did your slider get better as the night wore on Friday, as you got over 90, 95, even 100 pitches? That's what it seemed from the booth in Manhattan. Is that a type of pitch that maybe the deeper that you go, the better, the sharper, crisper, maybe even sometimes you could dot it up a little bit more, better?
Yeah, Friday was kind of a little bit weird. The slider was, it felt so good in my hand, or out of my hand in the pregame bullpen, and I knew that it was spinning really well that day. And once I got out on the mound and I went through those first couple innings, it was spinning more, it was moving more than in a couple of my outings past, and it was kind of affecting my command of that pitch. And so it took me a couple innings to find it, but once I found it, I was pretty much good with it for the rest of the night. I would say it got better as the night went on. Just because once you get that deep into a game, it's easy to repeat your arm action and repeat your motions. And in my opinion, some guys may get a little bit more fatigued, but I think I'm in great shape right now, and I felt as good as I did on the 128th pitch that I did on the first pitch. And so, but yeah, it's funny you say that. I came off the field after a strikeout in the third or fourth inning, and Coach Mazie looked at me and he says, "You got it now?" With talking about the slider, and I was like, "Yeah." I gave him a little laugh and I said, "Yeah, I got it now," because he could see I wasn't didn't have as much command with that pitch that I did in the starts before, but he saw once I got that strikeout in the third or fourth to end the inning on that pitch that I had it pretty much honed in, and it was pretty good for the rest of the night.
Yeah, it's fun to watch you work around an outing without one or the other. I mean, isn't that so much the game? Like, everybody's, if their out pitch isn't working or if their fastball command isn't there, you got to call an audible. You got to draw it up in the dirt, and you've got to figure out a way to smoke and mirror, duct tape, chicken wire the thing to get through whatever it is until you can find that release point or whatever it may be to find that pitch. Jackson Wolf perhaps doesn't get through that outing the way that he does at Kansas State his sophomore year under the same set of circumstances. Do I have that right?
100%. I think that's another difference in my maturity and experience since then. Making adjustments is a big part of that, and I think I'm a lot more aware of when I need to make an adjustment and what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And so I think that's another strong suit that I've been using this year is making adjustments. And I think I showed you that on Friday night, making the adjustment of not having necessarily the best slider command into it being the best pitch of the night.
So slider, a pitch that we wouldn't have been talking about, I guess, this time a couple of years ago, right? Because you ditched it when? After 19, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, for the loopy curveball. I pretty much used the curveball since I was 10 years old, because, you know, in my mind, a breaking pitch was different than a fastball, and now it really isn't in my mind because I throw it very similarly. To break that down, in years past, I was trying to throw a breaking ball. I was trying to, like, break my wrist and put spin on the ball and manipulate the ball in a fashion that it's gonna have a nice loop to it. And so that's what I used as my curveball for years. And, you know, as I gained experience and knowledge about pitching, and I knew that from my angle, my arm angle, that if I keep the same arm action but hold the slider grip and keep the same intent that I would a fastball, that pitch is gonna come out so much sharper. And it's going to be way more tough to hit as a hitter and see and differentiate from the fastball. And I think that makes a world of a difference when it comes to, like, pitch tunneling and hitters trying to tell which pitch is which. Yeah. It makes it a little bit more uncomfortable.
Yeah, release points are just about the same, if I'm not mistaken. And that breaking ball, when you throw that curveball, sometimes it can kind of pop up and a hitter can really identify it. It comes up and over that release point, so hitters got it, you know, right off the bat, and they can kind of sit and adjust a little easier. So I was talking to Randy about the slider. He said, you know, to ditch your curveball, you kind of it was a bit of a challenge, and you did so kicking and screaming. Take me back to that conversation, when he approached you, how he approached you, what type of fight, for lack of a better term, that was.
We actually had multiple conversations about it because I was pretty persistent that I wanted to keep the curveball, but also throw the slider and just kind of have the curveball as like a less than 10% or like I'd throw it and a hitter be like, oh my gosh, what was that? And then he won't see it for the rest of the night type deal. In Coach Mazie's mind, he wanted to completely focus on the slider. That way I could have as much command in it and as much trust in it as possible. And I will admit I was a little bit hard-headed about it because I had thrown the curveball since I was 10. I had such a good feel for it. And when I first started throwing sliders, it felt so weird on my hand because I'd never done it before. And it was hard for me to give up something that felt so comfortable and so close, I guess. But once I jumped with both feet and went head first diving into the deep end of the pool with it.
With a bit of a nudge, right?
Yeah, with a little push from Coach Mays, but I haven't looked back since. It feels so natural now, and it feels so satisfying when you can tunnel it with the same arm speed as the fastball and still throw strikes. And I think it made a really big difference in my pitchability and pretty much how hard it is to hit me.
So TCU on Friday, that's a big one, right? I mean, I don't think anybody's going to deny that or sweep that under the carpet. How do you keep the train on the tracks and stay within yourself as you have done your last 5-6 starts that you've taken the ball? That's going to be a challenge to not let that moment kind of consume you, right?
Yeah, definitely. When things have a bigger, when there's more money on the line, when there's more things at stake, last week I took that matchup versus Wiggs as who's the best left-hander in the Big 12. And, obviously put some pressure on my shoulders. I want to be the best lefty in the Big 12. So I want to win that game. I want to show better than he did. And I feel it's a very similar feeling this weekend with the guy that they have going. And to add a little bit of another element to it, I think if us as a whole squad want to play in the postseason, I think at least winning the series, if not sweeping TCU, is needed for that. So I think this will be the last chance that we have to show that we can be a force to be reckoned with in the Big 12.
Pressure is bad for some players, right? They get out of their element. Pressure sometimes is good. They rise to the level and the occasion. I feel like you're kind of the latter. Do you like the vice grips tightening on you? Does that give you an extra sense of focus? Does it recalibrate you? Does it send you to another area or something along those lines when that happens?
Yeah. I would say that just through my experience, I've been in situations where I've let the moment consume me. And in those situations when that had happened, you count how many times was that a successful outing? Zero. It never turns out to be good when you let a moment consume you or you let your anxieties or your doubts, overcome your thoughts. When you know that, that your chance at winning, when you let that type of thing overcome your thoughts is low, it makes you have confidence and it makes you want to trust yourself more. And you can see firsthand how that affects your mentality going forward. So once I got that Kansas series under my belt, I felt you know, how good it felt to have a really good quality start. And I felt how good it felt to be the Big 12 pitcher of the week again. And going forward, I knew that I'm going to do that every week. I felt like I had my timing down. I felt like I was in a great place mentally. And repeating that is the name of the game. But I think I'm, you know, like you said, I would be the latter. I think I thrive in moments like that.
Well, I'm just going to end it on that note with Jackson Wolf. Just a terrific interview, a terrific guy to have in the old Golden Blue. And I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Very insightful and thoughtful answers. He loves talking baseball. I love talking baseball with him. And I'm glad we were able to turn the recorder on, turn the mics on. And I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well. If you did, be sure to like, subscribe, maybe give us 5 stars, leave a rating. That only helps our podcast elevate the ever-crowded podcast space. So whatever platform you're listening on, we do appreciate you. And we hope that you'll join us on many of our other digital platforms as we get you ready for WVU and TCU. Top 5 opponent coming to Morgantown. We would love to have you at the ballpark, but of course we've got the capacity limitations. But wink, wink, nod, nod, there is that parking lot above the ballpark, WVU Medicine. I'm sure if you backed up the old truck and turned on the old radio and popped a few folding chairs with a couple of your favorite beverages, and it's a great vantage point to watch the ballpark then. I don't believe that there are any restrictions there, so hopefully I don't get my wrist slapped for making that suggestion. After all, we'll be able to hear you inside the seating bowl if you're loud and you're proud, and we could use the support, quite frankly, because it's a pivotal moment in the year. West Virginia and TCU. This could do wonders for West Virginia if they take 2 out of 3, heck, if they even sweep. But if you get swept, even if you lose 2 out of 3, the season kind of takes the wrong path. And we've got to grab the wheel and make sure that we go down the right road. So Jackson Wolf will take the ball coming up on Friday evening. We'll be on the air half hour before first pitch Friday evening, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon. Thanks to Jackson for joining us. And thanks to everybody for listening to this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast here on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. And be sure to find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUsports.com. The following has been a presentation of Learfield IMG College.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.